The problem was that we had a little too much fun with the whole "where is Kate Middleton" conspiracy theories, and now we're being punished by the royal family, who has cursed us, and by extension, our Los Angeles Dodgers, with our own homegrown and incredibly detrimental conspiracy that involves one of the most valuable players in the world, his friend and employee, millions of dollars worth of gambling debt, and two competing news articles trying to break the story that left just enough room for doubt that it has caused an endless supply of theories and drama surrounding the team and the player. And it is not the only insane sports gambling story from the past few weeks. Both show that it might have been a huge mistake for all these sports leagues, broadcast networks, and news organizations to embrace gambling in a way that is so open and blatant that it shocks even us.
I remain vindicated on this topic.
And yeah, this is a sports story, but it's also totally bizarre and gets weirder the more details come out. Details that will probably have changed by the time this video goes up, but here you go.
Didn't even get one regular season game.
No, he did get one.
Oh, he got one.
Yeah.
Okay. We got one regular season game.
Because it happened at 3 o'clock in the morning.
With the modern day Babe Ruth before scandal had to come and ruin everything. So let's talk about Shohei Ohtani first, because it is undeniable. He is one of the greatest to ever play the sport and had only previously been held back by his former team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, a dumb name for a team that has not been great. Although when I was a child in Orange County, they did have some great seasons, and it was a lot of fun.
It was because of that movie, Angels in the Outfield.
No, it was because they had a monkey in a little uniform that they would bring out when they wanted to get the crowd hyped up. They called him the Rally Monkey.
Now they just show him on the screens.
Yeah, no, they had a real fucking monkey, and they gave everyone these thunder sticks, and it was loud as hell.
Yeah.
It was a great time. But not anymore. The Angels fucking stink, and he was a wasted talent. So yeah, it was great news, at least for us, when the Doyers signed Ohtani to an absolutely absurd contract, inventing out of whole cloth new ways to pay players in order to somehow skirt league rules, and solidifying the Dodgers as the MLB's most hated team outside of maybe the Houston Astros.
That's right.
They are stained by that horrible scandal, and the stain will never be lifted. But now, things have gotten even worse, because the challenge is always, can the Dodgers go one season without a massive scandal? Difficulty level, impossible,
That's right. They
can't go one whole season without a scandal.
They can't even go one day.
They can't even go one whole offseason without a scandal. And so it got started earlier this year, because the Shohei Ohtani gambling scandal started just after the first game of the season while the team is over in Seoul, South Korea.
And the story itself is only confusing because of two versions of it running, which is one of the reasons that theories have been spreading so easily. But here's the basics. Shohei Ohtani has an interpreter with him constantly, a guy named Ippei Mizuhara, who'd previously worked for other MLB teams before meeting with Ohtani and becoming his official interpreter in 2017. And the two seemed to become great friends. Apparently they met back over in Japan, and it was just a long, wonderful friendship, and that led to Mizuhara accompanying Ohtani, even in scenarios that didn't really make sense if it was just an employer and employee situation. Mizuhara even played the role of catcher during Ohtani's appearance at the Home Run Derby a few years back. So they were obviously pretty close. The story as it goes right now is that Mizuhara had a serious gambling problem and was on the hook with a private bookie for millions of dollars. And that debt got paid, at least in part, from the bank account of Shohei Ohtani. And this was uncovered during an investigation of an illegal gambling ring based in Orange County, California, and one guy in particular named Matthew Boyer, who'd allegedly taken bets from Ohtani's interpreter.
Or is that what happened? Because in the initial story that ran on ESPN, that one that claimed that Ohtani himself had personally transferred $4.5 million to a bookie in order to pay off Mizuhara's debts as a friend because he was in so deep. Still, yes, it's an insanely large amount of gambling debt. So the ESPN report comes out, but it's around the same time that an LA Times article is published, which refutes many of those claims and officially states that Ohtani has actually been the victim of massive theft at the hands of his dear friend, maybe ex-friend, Mizuhara. And they say the following in their reporting.
Representatives of Dodgers superstar Shohei Ohtani on Wednesday accused his interpreter of engaging in a massive theft of the ballplayer's funds to place bets with an allegedly illegal bookmaker who is the target of a federal investigation. In a statement, the West Hollywood law firm Burke Brettler said,
Burke Brettler.
In the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discovered that Shohei has been the victim of a massive theft, and we are turning the matter over to the authorities. The Dodgers on Wednesday fired Mizuhara, a team spokesman said. One of the sources said that Mizuhara was not truthful when asked about the Times inquiries. He was still interpreting for Ohtani on Wednesday in Seoul. And yeah, there's videos of the two of them interacting with no indication that anything was wrong. But that also begs the question, was Ohtani aware that his right-hand man was addicted to gambling and in the hole? And then also surreptitiously bailed him out on his own, knowing that that action would potentially get him in trouble. Or that Shohei Ohtani himself is a gambling addict who threw his friend and interpreter under the bus in order to save his own career. Or did his interpreter actually just straight up steal money from Ohtani? The story that Ohtani had nothing to do with this and it was actually his interpreter wiring money from Ohtani's accounts does a good job at shielding Ohtani from potential federal crimes, because it, regardless of the intent, it would be illegal to send this very large amount of sum to an illegal gambling operation.
Yes, yes.
So yeah, we're leaning towards the most realistic theory, one that still could get Ohtani in a lot of trouble, and that's that he just paid off his friend's debts. And what makes this even weirder is the fact that Mizuhara claimed that Ohtani knew and that he wasn't mad and that he paid the debts off willingly with no issue.
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, America, land of the free. Sure, no yeah, problem. What could be the problem with paying off my friend's gambling debts in the land of the free?
You promise not to do it again, though, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, while Ohtani and his legal team now say that he was the victim of theft, which it doesn't make sense until you realize that Mizuhara was still interpreting for Ohtani up until yesterday evening. So, theoretically, he could have twisted Ohtani's words in order to make himself look better in the initial conversation.
Yeah, it is a funny predicament they have. They need to find a third Japanese speaker to sort this situation
sadly,
out.
Sadly, there are none.
I mean, last I checked, they were teaching Ohtani Spanish.
Yeah.
Maybe try that.
So here's from another ESPN article about the interpreter and how they might be getting mixed messages in the initial unveiling of this drama.
Mizuhara on Tuesday evening laid out his story in great detail, including saying that Ohtani had sat with him and the two transferred the money in $500,000 increments in several different settings. But as ESPN prepared to publish a story Wednesday, the spokesman disavowed Mizuhara's account. In a subsequent interview with Mizuhara, he told ESPN he had not been truthful, that Ohtani had no knowledge of his gambling activities, debts, or efforts to repay him. On Thursday, a source close to Ohtani gave an explanation for the changing storylines. As Ohtani's handlers tried to determine what had happened, they initially relied solely on Mizuhara, who continued to translate for Ohtani. Yeah. Anyway, so this report added that multiple sources, including Mizuhara, told ESPN that Ohtani does not gamble and that the funds covered Mizuhara's losses. ESPN had reviewed bank information showing Ohtani's name on two $500,000 payments sent in September and October.
So at a base level, this is still potentially illegal because, again, allegedly,
yeah,
under his name, money was sent to an illegal gambling operation.
Crimes were committed.
Now, it's probably true that the interpreter was the one placing the bets based on the information gathered from both ESPN and the LA Times. But it also seems unlikely that Ohtani would have no idea that any of this was going on, and also incredibly unlikely that his interpreter, regardless of how close they are, would have access to the bank account of one of the most valuable athletes on the planet and then be able to use that account to wire hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time without Ohtani or his managers, agents, and accountants having any idea about
it. Yeah, that's not something banks are usually pretty, like, blasé about.
It's, yeah, they usually will at least call to check.
Yeah. But so, then again, they probably called and they were like,
can we speak to Ohtani?
Ohtani picked up, he's like, oh, sorry, no English. Here, talk to Mizuhara. Like, there are... because he's so dependent on this guy for, like, just existing in the United States, like, they're, I don't know.
On the really sad part of this, you have potentially a guy whose heart was in the right place trusting his friend and employee with his entire life in a country that he wasn't born in.
His personal gateway to the United States in many ways. Yeah, it's fucked
up. So that is, it is fucked up. So, yes. Back to the, this probably couldn't happen with a bank without Ohtani knowing about it. There are actual regulations in place to stop these types of things from happening because this is basic fraud. Sending money to someone through someone else's bank account is just fraud.
Yeah, but like, again, like even if he goes, Shohei goes down to the bank, I'm sure,
That doesn't happen, but yes.
Like, if he goes down to the bank with his interpreter and he's just doing like routine finance, like, okay, I need to move some money around, the translator is the one relaying all this information to the banker.
Yeah.
And the banker assumes, like, okay, so yeah, $500,000 here, $500,000 here, and okay, yeah, another $500,000 over here.
Sure.
Is that cool? Okay. Thumbs up. Sounds like he's down with it, as you translated exactly what I said, right?
This is going to go one of two ways. Either this is going to get swept under the rug completely and just be a black cloud hanging over the Dodgers organization, like everything else has been for years.
I don't think the league can handle this
kind of skin. That's the other thing. The other way it goes is that there's the most in-depth investigation possible, and shit about this comes out for a very long time, and they piece together how he did this.
Well, I mean, at least this time around, there was no sexual assault allegations.
Yes, yeah, this was a financial crime.
Last time, it was not a fun story. This one's interesting in a way that's less fucked up.
Yeah. So there definitely seems to be more to the story, and adding fuel to that is the fact that Ohtani brings in so much money to the sport in general, let alone the team. It's in conspiracy mode. It is in everyone's best interest to make sure the story that implicates him is the one that dominates the news cycle the least.
Right.
But hey, feel free to go nuts in the comments below. And yes, this does suck as a Dodgers fan. I would have loved to have entered this season
if you were a real Dodgers fan, you would have known that disappointment is always around the corner.
True. I just thought it was over for real this time.
Nope.
Hey, it could be worse. Could be a Houston Astros fan, so... Or you could be a Phillies fan who loves dollar hot dogs.
Yeah, they got rid of that because you couldn't behave yourself.
things could be worse.
Not exactly related to this gambling scandal, but close enough that we should definitely at least mention it, is the fact that an employee of the Jacksonville Jaguars in the NFL was recently caught stealing millions of dollars from the organization in order to fuel his own gambling habits. And this number is so astronomically high that there are an infinite amount of questions here, too, because the finance manager of the Jaguars apparently stole $22 million from the team and spent most of that money on FanDuel.
Yeah.
The team has since reached out to FanDuel directly to nicely ask them to please give the money back.
Which is very funny.
We doubt, I don't know, it's probably not going to work out that cleanly, but the team employee, Amit Patel, spent millions on gambling while employed by the team and was quoted in a recent article in The Athletic describing just how bad things got, saying, "You wake up in the middle of the night and you're betting on Turkish women's volleyball."
That's fucking rough.
You just can't even get through a night without making it a little bit interesting. Gambling is, I think, the worst addiction. Because...
True, that's the thing is, and I've said it before, every once in a while, enjoy it. I like playing fantasy with my friends and stuff like that.
So, like with all addictive things, the gambling. So most people can gamble, and it's just a little novelty for them. Mm-hmm. And much like with alcohol, it's like most people can drink alcohol, it's not an issue, and that makes it much more tempting for the people who would have a problem with it. And the thing is, you can drink yourself to death. But, gambling is just a whole different fucking beast where you are just, constantly, literally fighting to survive once you get far enough down that pit where you have no money. Everything's on the line. You're in debt everywhere. Yeah. And you're just like, well, fuck, I'm fucked. I guess I need to gamble more to stop my gambling problem.
Yeah. Personal anecdote, that's what was me with alcohol. That's why I had to stop. And luckily I was able to stop. But, yeah, and that gave me a whole new perspective on what addiction actually feels like. And it's horrible. And it fucking sucks. It's odd that... It's odd in a sense that, I don't know, the whole aspect of it, but it is... The one thing that I do find weird is the fact that, every sports game has odds on screen and is essentially goading their entire fan bases into making substantial financial decisions.
You can't enjoy sports without being reminded constantly that you could be making some money off. It's kind of fucked up. And I don't really care about sports that much, but if I did, I would feel like it was kind of degrading the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough sports for the day.
That was a lot of sports, folks. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Let's check in on someone else who might be in a bit of trouble because they flew too close to the sun. The Marchioness of The Marchioness of Cholmondeley.
The Marchioness of Cholmondeley.
Has now been accused.
Chumley, apparently.
Yeah, the, fuck you, England. Get out of here, England. Learn to speak English. They've now been accused of possessing looted Chinese artifacts. I mean, yeah, so that's certainly true, considering how much pilfering just the British in general were doing throughout time, especially the high bloods.
Yeah.
They all got some Chinese artifacts somewhere in their closet. But it is kind of funny that this woman went from complete obscurity.
At least to Americans.
Yeah, to everyone laughing about her weird title, to now being front page news for everything, including having photos taken where she's relaxing on Chinese furniture stolen during the Qing Dynasty. All because the internet went absolutely feral over rumors of Kate Middleton going missing. Still not solved in a way that matters, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, you're, I'm going to need
still
a
up for debate.
I'm going to need a little bit more before I let this one go. Anyways, with more of on the Marchioness of Cholmondeley and how the fuck she got her hands on stolen Chinese goods, here's Time Magazine, who starts their reporting talking about the rumors around the alleged affair with Prince William.
Hanbury's lawyers told Business Insider that the illicit romance rumors are completely false. But as her profile has risen in recent weeks due to an intensification of public interest around the royal family, online sleuths have zeroed in on what they suspect are the unsavory origins of her furniture. After images were recently widely circulated anew from older stories in the Financial Times, Vanity Fair, and other media about Hanbury and Houghton Hall, some social media users have taken particular note of specific pieces of Oriental decor, suggesting that they may have been pillaged from China during the late Qing Dynasty towards the end of the 19th century. Quote, "The luxurious life of Prince William's mistress, Rose, actually came from China," reads the title of a post last week on Zhao Hongshu, an Instagram-like Chinese social media platform. According to the post, and similar ones spread across other Chinese social media platforms, Hanbury's husband had inherited the furniture in question from the Sassoons, of which he is a descendant through his paternal grandmother, Sybil Sassoon. Is Vidal Sassoon part of that family?
I think he is. Yeah, that is a name you do see pop up in, like, European nobility history. There was like a poet. I don't know. It's just one of those family names. Mm-hmm. The Sassoons.
Yeah.
Oh, the Belgian Sassoons? No, the English Sassoons. It then goes down a crazy timeline about the Sassoon family, how they got rich dealing in commodities before ultimately getting to England, where one of their sons was knighted, bringing them into the small royal circle. While the Sassoons played a significant role in shaping China and were avid collectors of art from around the world, it's unclear whether they acquired specific items through purges or pilfering. The height of their business in the country, however, coincided with China's Century of Humiliation, which started in 1839 and ended in 1945 and was marked by the looting of millions of artifacts, most notably from the Old Summer Palace in Beijing, which was ransacked by British and French soldiers during the Second Opium War. The scrutiny of Hanbury's home decor has reignited broader calls for the return of other potentially misappropriated foreign artifacts in the UK. So yes, it's absurd that amidst an ongoing conspiracy surrounding the Princess of Wales and the heir to the throne, that this side character and potential side piece with a ridiculous title is now just being accused of enjoying a succulent Chinese couch.
What is the crime?
Oh, what? Enjoying a couch? A succulent Chinese couch?
Note the beautiful way in which I lounge.
This is democracy manifest.
Anyways, throw that on the pile, and that pile of absurd news will continue to grow in just a second. But first, we have to take a quick break to thank today's sponsor for helping to keep at least one of our faces silky and smooth.
Not me.
Henson Shaving. Henson Shaving is a family-owned aerospace parts manufacturer that has made parts for the International Space Station and Mars Rover, and now they are bringing precision engineering to your shaving experience. Razor blades are like diving boards. The longer the board, the more wobble. The more wobble, the more nicks, cuts, and scrapes. A bad shave isn't a blade problem, it's an extension problem. By using aerospace-grade CNC machines, Henson makes metal razors that extend just 0.0013 inches, which is less than the thickness of a human hair. That means a secure and stable blade with a vibration-free shave.
But wait, it gets better. The razor has built-in channels to evacuate hair and cream, which makes clogging virtually impossible. Seriously, Henson Shaving wants the best razor, not the best razor business. That means no plastic, no subscriptions, no proprietary blades, and no planned obsolescence. The Henson razor works with standard, dual-edged blades to give you that old-school shave with the benefits of new-school tech. Once you own a Henson razor, it's only about $3 to $5 per year to replace the blades. Honestly, we love this razor, mainly because it is infinitely reusable. It gets the job done extremely well, and you're not contributing to more plastic pollution in the process. Also, the handle has it's got a nice weight to it. It's ridiculously cheap to refill over time, and it's always fun to reject modernity and embrace tradition in a non-problematic way.
It's time to say no to subscriptions and yes to a razor that'll last you a lifetime. Visit hensonshaving.com/newsdump to pick the razor for you and use code newsdump and you'll get 2 years worth of blades free with your razor. Just make sure to add them to your cart. That's 100 free blades when you head to hensonshaving.com/newsdump and use code newsdump. Check them out if you're looking for a good shave. Supporting our sponsors means supporting the show.
All right, back to the show now, and let's start the second half out with some updates, including an update on Apple's seemingly endless legal problems, which now include an antitrust case brought by the U.S. Department of Justice, a case that will be very interesting to watch because what Apple's being accused of is pretty much par for the course when it comes to massive corporations in this country.
Yeah.
And the main takeaways from the lawsuit is that Apple somehow has a monopoly on the mobile phone market because of the iPhone. Which doesn't seem to hold any water because there are many, many smartphones out there from various companies, including Google, who has their own operating system, just like Apple, that is used across countless devices. Uh-huh. Not saying the suit isn't valid or won't set a positive precedent for the industry. It's just odd to focus specifically on Apple for what, in many cases, seems to be the company's focus on keeping everything entirely within its own ecosystem. Which, yeah, I mean, makes them a ton of money. Doesn't always work with other products, but it also allows them to keep everything private and secure, which has been a major focus for them in recent years and one of their big selling points, I'd say.
If this is just the beginning of a bunch of monopoly busting, then yeah, sure. Hell yeah, let's get Ticketmaster and Live Nation next.
Not busting to mention, makes me feel good.
That movie's not getting great reviews. Not to mention Google, but a lot of what's brought up in the DOJ's case seems to have either already been decided in the case against Epic Games, or is just it's claims of a company making products for its own ecosystem. And in one very particular case, they seem to argue that Apple giving Android users a green text bubble is almost akin to bullying people into forcing them to own an iPhone.
What are you, fucking 12 years old?
Which,
who
cares? It is wild.
What?
Yeah.
This is something that, like, teenagers tease each other
whenever
about.
Whenever Elliot texts me, I go, ew!
Yeah, and I'm like,
ew! What are these boogers on my screen?
The bubbles on my phone all look great. That's your problem.
Here's the New York Times with more. The department joined 16 states and the District of Columbia to file a significant challenge to reach and influence of Apple, arguing in an 88-page lawsuit that the company had violated antitrust laws with practices that were intended to keep customers reliant on their iPhones and less likely to switch to a competing device. The tech giant prevented other companies from offering applications that compete with Apple products like its digital wallet, which could diminish the value of the iPhone and hurts consumers and smaller companies that compete with it, the government said.
It takes direct aim at the iPhone, Apple's most popular device and most powerful business, and attacks the way the company has turned the billions of smartphones it has sold since 2007 into the centerpiece of its empire. By tightly controlling the user experience on iPhones and other devices, Apple has created what critics call an uneven playing field, where it grants its own products and services access to core features that it denies rivals. Over the years, it has limited finance companies' access to the phone's payments chip and Bluetooth trackers from tapping into its location service feature. It's also easier for users to connect Apple products like smartwatches and laptops to the iPhone than to those made by other manufacturers. Each step in Apple's course of conduct built and reinforced the moat around its smartphone monopoly, the government said in the lawsuit, which was filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey. It added that the company's practices resulted in higher prices and less innovation. Apple says these practices make its iPhones more secure than other smartphones. But app developers and rival device makers say Apple uses its power to crush competition. It's unclear what implications the suit, which is likely to drag out years before any type of resolution, would have for consumers. Apple plans to file a motion to dismiss the case in the next 60 days.
And here's the part about the chat bubbles. The lawsuit filed Thursday focuses on a group of practices that the government said Apple had used to shore up its dominance. The company undermines the ability of iPhone users to message with owners of other types of smartphones, like those running the Android operating system, the government said. That divide, epitomized by the green bubbles that show an Android owner's messages, sent a signal that other smartphones were lower quality than the iPhone, according to the lawsuit.
Again, what are you, a fucking child? Like, I'm actually glad I don't get to see your stupid little animojis. I'm sure it was great. Can't see it.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. It's a cartoon that kind of looks like you, saying words coming out of its mouth that you talked. Fuck you. I'm 38.
I think the big issue, which they, I don't know if they mentioned it here, but the big issue seems to be that, like, I don't know, because I haven't seen, like, if I send you a picture, will it be as high quality?
No, it'll look like shit.
Yeah, and I know that if you send video it looks like shit.
I mean, but this is, like, they've been talking about making, like, iMessage, like, open source in a way for, like, years. And yeah. It's like, just fucking do it. Just to make this lawsuit go away, finally do it. Like, because people have figured out how to, like, jailbreak the system
to
do it.
Didn't that company just, they found a way to just make all the messages blue? It wasn't as if they had, like, turned Android users into an iMessage ecosystem or something. It was just like,
I mean, I don't know exactly what they did, but Apple shut that shit down real fast.
Yeah, it's just bizarre because, like, if you take, like, the monopoly argument, it's like there's an infinite number of messaging apps that all do phone calling and video chatting and image and video sharing.
So, yeah, like, when you're talking between an Apple and an Android user, you are SMS talking. But when it's two Apple devices talking to each other, you are iMessage talking.
Yeah.
Those are distinct. I don't know. This lawsuit sounds dumb.
Yeah, and it's not like Apple has the entire dominance over the smartphone market, because Samsung is huge. Google has its own product. There's a bunch of other products out there. Motorola makes stuff. There's that OnePlus phone that's still kicking around. There's a bunch of stuff out there.
Yeah, I'm really failing to see the logic here.
It continues, Apple has similarly made it difficult for the iPhone to work with smartwatches other than its own Apple Watch, the government argued.
Okay, that might be, I don't know, something.
Once an iPhone user owns an Apple Watch, it becomes far more costly for them to ditch the phone.
I mean, that's like I don't know. Like, I have AirPods and an Android, and, like, I don't get, like, all the, like, gestures and control out of it, but, like,
it works for what it works.
It works. Like, I'm just, like, I can pause it with a finger. I can turn on awareness mode.
Yeah, even, like the spatial audio, I never use that. And people that I have talked to about it are like, oh, how do you turn that off? I hate it. Because it's like whatever way you turn, the audio stays.
Oh, that's weird.
It's bizarre. Anyways, as the resident Apple owner who was, I was a diehard Android fanboy for a decade. I made the switch and look, it's a fine phone. But I'm just confused about the whole thing because when consumers are aware that they buy an Apple product and that works with other Apple products seamlessly, it's the same experience
that's the whole point.
You would get with like the Google phone and their AirPods or the Samsung AirPods and their phone. Anyways, that's just how ecosystems work in tech. There's many such examples of similar companies that have ecosystems just like this. Not to mention the ones that we just talked about, but off the top of my head, Amazon's Ring comes to mind.
I mean, they should get hit by an antitrust because it is really annoying that, like, I inherited, like, Ring products and now I'm like, there's better shit out there, but
you can't switch because you're
just be like basically like
throwing away hundreds of dollars,
like just
stuff.
A bunch of electronic waste. And it's just like whatever.
But it's not like Apple doesn't allow other products to be used with their phones. Also, they don't have a traditional monopoly at all because there's heavy competition in all aspects of their businesses, from computers down to the phones. So I don't know. It's a weird argument. If this ends up being a positive thing for the tech space overall, I'm all for it. If this is just the first in many breaking up monopoly cases, I'm all for it. It's just weird to be like, it seems very specifically that they're very upset about the green bubbles and getting made fun of for it.
Someone
also,
at the FTC, just like their kids just like make fun of them for having a green bubble.
Also, conspiracy hat on, Apple has always run afoul with the government for not wanting to like show off the encryption in their phones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyways, moving on.
Speaking of lawsuits, it appears as though the state of Texas was not content with merely shutting out Pornhub from their state. They have now filed a lawsuit against two other adult websites, which will almost certainly result in them just blocking access as well. Yeah. No cooming in
not
Texas.
For Texas, no.
No. In Texas, when you come, that sperm better land on an egg.
And it better result in a pregnancy taken to term. After that, after the child's born, whatever.
Yeah, after the kid's born, fuck you.
But if it
get
doesn't,
out of my face.
You're in a lot of trouble.
So Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has filed a lawsuit against X-Hamster and Chatterbait for not complying with the new Texas verification law. And we can't see this turning out anyway other than those sites just simply blocking access to Texans entirely. Not that Texans wouldn't find a way around this, as we saw with the Pornhub block. Searches and downloads of VPN services absolutely skyrocketed in the days following the decision to remove Pornhub access with the state.
There's ways around.
So, with more on these latest filings, here is 404 Media.
As first reported by local news outlet KXAN, the Office of the Attorney General filed two civil lawsuits on Tuesday afternoon against Hammy Media.
That's what it's called?
Which owns X-Hamster, and Multimedia, which owns Chatterbait. Paxton's lawsuit against X-Hamster asks the court to force the site to pay a civil penalty of up to $1.67 million, with an additional $10,000 a day since filing. For Chatterbait, it's $1.78 million plus $10,000 per day. And the article talks about the recent news regarding Pornhub and then gave an update on this decision, once again from Ken Paxton. Paxton celebrated his constituents not being able to visit Pornhub, while much of the rest of the country and the world still can freely, as a win. Pornhub has now disabled its website in Texas. Sites like Pornhub are on the run because Texas has a law that aims to prevent them from showing harmful, obscene material to children, he wrote on Twitter. We recently secured a major victory against Pornhub and other sites that sought to block this law from taking effect. In Texas, companies cannot get away with showing porn to children. If they don't want to comply, good riddance.
They also add that currently both X-Hamster and Chatterbait are still available in Texas, so better start jerking it. You don't know. Get one more wank in before.
Then you're going to have to just go to X-Videos, X.com.
Yeah.
Which, again, we bring up, like, how is X.com not running afoul of these regulations, considering that it is perfectly fine to upload hardcore pornography onto that site?
I am propositioned to view pornography more on Elon Musk's X than anything else on the internet going back to, like, the late 90s.
Yeah.
It's interesting that hasn't been addressed by states like this that seem to care about this kind of stuff. But yeah, for how long that you'll still be able to visit these sites, that's anyone's guess. You better hurry on over. You can pause the video if you need to.
You might not have enough time to goon, but you probably still have enough time to coom.
Yep. And we should point out once again, in case you missed all the other times we've talked about this, that taking at face value, this age verification shit, it sounds like a good idea. Great. And no one would argue that kids should have unfettered access to adult websites. But the way that this is being handled, it's dystopian, it's weird, it's unsafe, and it will almost certainly result in data mining, hacking, and fraud, among other things, because you literally have to upload your government ID to a state portal to visit websites. Anyway, finally today, another one bites the dust. Looks like Kotaku's days as a games journalism site might be numbered because the new ownership has already forced two editors-in-chief to quit and is now demanding that the site's staff crank out 50 game guides per week.
Sounds reasonable, right?
Something that was not exactly what Kotaku was ever known for, and yeah.
It's weird. Oh, we own a gaming site? Hey, they got any of those Brady guides?
The strategy guides.
My kid just got this Stardew Valley. He can't figure out nothing.
He needs some tips and tricks.
Oh, they don't even have guides on this site?
Like, they're reverting to like a business model from like the early internet.
Weird.
And it's, I'm sorry, like 9 times out of 10, if I need help with a video game, I'm going to YouTube so I can literally watch someone do it.
Yep.
Instead of like, game guides, I mean, sometimes they're useful, but they're like recipes where you gotta scroll past so much fucking filler bullshit and like ads in the middle.
Are like that too. You gotta skip through like 3 minutes of, you know, our channel, we jump right into the news.
That's right.
Gaming stuff, they do kind of stretch a little bit.
I mean, sometimes.
But usually you can just like skip ahead a little bit.
Yeah, it's easier with video.
Yeah.
But with the game guides, I mean, back in the day, literally early internet, just like fucking text files.
Yeah.
It was very helpful. It was like, holy shit. Yeah. This is sick.
Back in my day, we used to print out the combo codes for the Mortal Kombat.
Now I print out my Helldivers codes.
So I have them all right there.
I'm always getting butterfingers right when it counts.
Yeah. Anyways, here's Aftermath, which is a new subscriber-based gaming news site started by former Kotaku employees. So you should definitely go ahead and just bookmark their site by now for your gaming
games. Seems to be the way the wind is blowing, is just people who ran sites that used to be good and were ruined by terrible management starting their own independent version of that site.
But you need to support them because that's the whole point. So links are always down in the description, but here's from their reporting. Jen Glennon, who took over as editor-in-chief of Kotaku in October, resigned Thursday. In a resignation letter seen by Aftermath, Glennon says that she made this choice due to the management team's recent decision to deprioritize news in favor of guides. Glennon is the second editor-in-chief of Kotaku since Stephen Totilo's departure in 2021, following Patricia Hernandez, who was fired in August 2023.
After careful consideration, I have concluded that the current management structure and decision-making processes at GO Media are not aligned with my values and goals for Kotaku, Glennon wrote in her letter of resignation, which was addressed to GO Media executives Jim Spanfeller and Leah Goldman. I firmly believe that the decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided given the current infrastructure of the site, Glennon wrote. This decision is directly contradicted by months of traffic data and shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work here. According to a source close to the situation, Kotaku's staff will be expected to create 50 guides a week at the site. Currently, Kotaku's homepage features a prominent game tips and guides module at the top of the page in a space that was previously reserved for major stories and breaking news. Staff members have criticized the homepage redesign on social media, noting that Kotaku's major source of traffic is not guides.
New management and owners not understanding what they bought, tale as old as time.
Maybe they think they can have like ChatGPT watch YouTube videos of people playing video games and just write down what happens.
Yeah.
And use that as the guides.
Uh-huh.
And then you don't have to pay anyone.
Yes.
That's correct. I feel like I just gave them an idea.
Also,
that's not free. Usually when I give ideas, they're free. That one's going to cost you, Jim Spanfeller.
Mm-hmm.
Money.
And yeah.
Pay your employees. Fuck you.
It just seems like it seems such a bad idea because there's so many options for getting game guides and walkthroughs.
Like you go down to the Barnes & Noble and you pick up the Primo's game.
I'm just saying in general, like YouTube, social media, anything like that. Whereas finding breaking news and in-depth journalism related to the gaming industry is a lot harder to find and also a lot more tantalizing to clicks and getting people to read things than someone just like out there searching for game guides and hoping that the Kotaku one's the one that pops up. Also, it seems like a lot more work to crank out 50 in-depth game guides a week than to focus on news stories that'll be very, very widely spread. I don't know. It's a bad decision, but there's probably no thinking behind it because the people that run these places are very dumb.
Yeah, they don't even know what they own.
Dumb enough to lose two editors-in-chiefs in a couple of years. Anyways, that's it for today. We do have some weird, wacky, fun, hopefully fun news coming with Weekly Weird News very shortly. But in the meantime, please like the video. Please leave a comment, reply to a comment, do all that engagement stuff. Just make sure you like the video. And if you haven't seen it already, we have two new videos over here. We got one from earlier in the week about Trump having his assets seized. And also we have tech news about Elon Musk being potentially, probably racist. Seems that way.
Yeah.
Check those out and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.